episode 28 of the ReWrap Podcast, where we talk all things about the photo, video, and creative lifestyle. Again, opposite me is my one and only bud, editor-in-chief of ResourceMagOnline.com, who is still tearing up Manhattan, is the Jaren Schneider, and I am portrait and headshot photographer, Karaman DeGuman. First story of the day is Canon just unloaded on us this week.
Yeah, I mean, unloaded news, if that's what you mean.
Well, yeah, they just unloaded. There was a lot of news.
Yeah, there was. I had to, like, get all on my laptop in a small corner, hunker down, and write a bunch of stuff. So, yeah. Well,
we talked about one of them, which was the mirrorless camera, and you were surprised to hear that they kept the EOS M going. I was like, yeah, man, they totally do it in, like, Asia, and I think Europe, and maybe Canada.
It's North America was like totally devoid of the EOS series after the colossal failure of the original M. Like, that camera just flopped. As if a camera could flop, that camera would be the one to look to as the example of how you would do it. Like, it really didn't do well, and
yeah,
it did so unwell that the M2 didn't get out here at all. We didn't even hear about it.
And
the
just Japan only.
Yeah, and then M3 is Japan and Europe only. I don't think it's North America at all. And
you know what? I will say that the EOS, when the EOS M was being announced and it was rumored, I was like, you know what? This camera makes a lot of sense as just a pure video camera, a B camera or a light camera you'd put in a quadcopter or drone.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? The EOS M still has a very good following for that, and it's a nice. You can buy one probably on eBay or Craigslist for around $200-$250 for a body.
So that's interesting you bring that up, because this one, I forget how much they're asking for it. It's probably like $1,500-$1,600, yeah. Right? Okay,
the price is ridiculous, brand
because
new. It's idiotic.
You can buy it on eBay for $700, brand new, because
it's been out for a while.
Yeah, so you can get it from around the world. So like. I mean, this would have worked in like a non-global economy
the
where it's
gray
like
market.
Whatever, but you can go buy it from somebody else who has it if you really want one. But the thing is, if you really wanted one, odds are you already have it because you purchased it from someone who could have gotten it for you in Europe or Japan. So it's just
weird. I was very close to purchasing a used one for, I think, about $250.
The M or the M3?
No, just the M. The M3 does not go for that low. Only the original M. And you can run Magic Lantern on it.
Mm. Okay.
So
I see what you
really
mean
there.
I
don't know what that means because I'm not a Canon person. What that means is like you just get more options.
You get the video options you get on cameras that Canon does for some weird reason refuses to put into their DSLRs and other cameras. Like focus peaking.
I think one of those things was like, focus peaking. I think audio meters on the back of the screen. I know that's important. Like that's...
Yeah. But, you know,
like
anyway, the EOS
I know Anthony Thurston at SLR Lounge, he's got one, and me and him have met at trade show conferences and appreciated this unsung camera, this black sheep in Canon's lineup.
I honestly feel like it deserves to be a black sheep, because even now, for very little, you can buy better cameras for aerial if you want to. Like, especially with Blackmagic producing stuff, like, it's fine. Like, you could put a Blackmagic Pocket Cinema camera and probably get better video out of that. And you can get it raw if you really want it. So, like,
this is true.
So, and I don't even recommend that camera to most people. So, and I'm recommending it over the M. So, that should put things into perspective. So, the M3, it's just, I feel like if Canon was going to do this, they should have just done the M4. Like, make it an actual revolutionary camera and try again. And I think people would have responded differently. But now we're just getting this, we have, like, extra. It's what it feels like. We have extra. So we're going to...
Extra inventory that hasn't sold. So North America.
North America. Hello. Hey, we're back, baby.
We're back after a couple years.
We got a camera with slightly better but still terrible autofocus. And the same sensor you find in the T5i or whatever.
Yeah, or I think Canon Rebel SL1, which I think had the same sensor as the EOS M at the time as well.
Still.
But, you know, when I talk about, like, I was going to get this camera, it was only for video. Do not get me wrong, folks. This camera would never shoot a still in its life for me.
It's not good.
Because it's absolutely terrible.
Yeah, it's...
But even though the firmware updates helped, but not by much.
Oh, I mean, okay. Come on. It's anything will help that. Yeah, anyway, the other stuff they announced, which is far more interesting, at least in my opinion.
Yes.
They have the new 35mm f1.4 L2, and they talked about this new glass optic that they've got in there, and this is the first camera lens to have that.
Which I'm very interested in, Jeremy, because, you know, the last lens I bought was a 35mm 1.4, and I will absolutely admit that when I'm shooting wide open on any, like, super fast Leica glass, Even like the Noct Deluxe, but not my Simulux, not my iPhone 4. But like this new 3514 that I have, yeah, wide open. I'm going to get chromatic aberration in strong, like, contrast areas.
Yeah, but it's so easily correctable these days, though.
But you know, Jared, how it's correctable is you just make what's blue and purple gray.
Yeah.
That's correctable. That's not correctable. That just
generally you can't tell.
That just mutes it.
Yeah, you can't tell.
I don't know. I feel like I could tell. But the whole point of this, when I see the graphics of how they explain what, because this is, for me, this is still voodoo. But I'm looking at the graphics to explain like how, what they're doing, and it's, oh God, I can't even explain it in audio terms.
I can try. They've basically made a blue element that, like, it's called the blue spectrum reflective glass element, and it filters out the other two major color frequencies that you see in those highlights, in the contrast points. So there's a whole element in there specifically designed to cut out the corners. What I'm curious about is, like, whatever they're doing, how are they making it only affect edges and contrast points? That would be of interest to me, rather than just sticking a giant piece of glass in front. But it works on wavelengths of light. It basically, like, cancels out those wavelengths that would appear in the contrast points.
Yeah, and it has two aspherical elements. I know that, not to get too light, I don't know, glass geekiness to you, but I just know that Leica lenses mostly only have one. There was one time they made a 35mm with two aspherical elements, and they call that the AA. And apparently that lens now used goes for like 10K plus, which is, I think retail is only like 2 or 3K when it came out. So I don't know why that it's so special, but I understand that it just helps with sharpness and clarity, and, well, I don't know, all glass does that, I suppose. But that's, this new Canon 35 has two of them. It's got two of them. It's got a lot of glass elements and a lot of groups. 14 glass elements and 9 groups, I think, off the top of my head. But
if it's 14 and 9, that's different than even the Sigma 35-1.4, which is 13 and 11.
Yeah, and so essentially all these words that are on this page that we've put up on resourcemagonline.com, Jaron, again, editor-in-chief, he wrote all these stories, that all these words, what they come down to, what I'm basically taking away, is that Canon has put some words up there that make it seem like this is possibly the best 35mm out there in the world. That's what I think.
We'll see, because...
Yeah, we'll see until we get our hands on it.
Yeah, the 1.4, the original 1.4, just did not hold a candle to Sigma. I mean, Sigma's was just so much better.
The 35
better.
Art?
Yeah.
The 35mm art?
Okay. It wasn't just a little bit better than every other 35mm lens out there. It was, like, a lot better, like, comically better. So... Yeah. The only one that was, like, slightly better than it was, like, a Zeiss. And it was just, like, yeah, a little bit better than the Sigmas. But the Sigma was just, like, it was just those two neck and neck at the top. And then everything else from any other manufacturer was just at the bottom. Garbage in comparison. So we'll see. Yeah, I'm interested to see how this thing stacks up to the 35-1.4, especially since they've got, like, 2 years on the 35-1.4 in terms of, like, development and stuff like that. So if only, let's say this.
What does that mean, 2 years? What do you mean? Is that because the last one came out 2 years ago? No. What,
yeah, 35mm f1.4, the original Sigma Art lens came out 2 years ago.
Oh, Sigma Art, sorry.
Yeah.
That's right. That's what you mean. So you're comparing Sigma to Canon.
So what I'm saying is like Sigma had their lens come out 2 years ago and it blew everything out of the water. Now Canon has had 2 years to make something better than that. And if it doesn't stack up, it's double the price. And if it does stack up, is it double better?
This is true.
So that's where we have to look at here, because you're getting L pricing. And, you know, in Canon's defense, Nikon's 35-1.4 is also the same price as the Canon one, which is, I think, $1,700 or $1,800. So $900 for the Sigma, and then Nikon and Canon's versions are double that.
Twice as much.
Yeah.
Got it.
And the Nikon 35mm is a great lens. It's just not as good as the Sigma. Like, every Nikon shooter who shoots, like, weddings, every single one of them has a 35mm from Sigma on their camera.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
I don't know about the Canon people. I think a lot of Canon people really love the red line, and they trust the Canon optics.
The red ring.
But for sure the Nikon people, they're all using Sigma.
Okay. It's good to know. All right. Moving on from one industry heavyweight, Canon, to possibly the new one, Sony. We got lots of Sony A7 R2 news. The camera that just won't die. Camera that is currently, as we're recording, number one in the camera power rankings, and we'll find out as we record this in a couple of days, if it's still there or not.
Yeah,
after the reviews have come out now this month, right?
Exactly, everyone's gotten their hands on it. So I'm still collecting votes from our esteemed team of people who are providing their insight on this. But I'm expecting to be able to give our new camera rankings out on the day this podcast actually is announced. So we'll see. We'll talk about the new ones next week. For now, I don't think it's going to change, but we'll see.
Okay. And you wrote a piece earlier this week on why the Sony a7R II can't shoot 10-bit, which is the color space, whereas the GH4 can spit that out via its HDMI, and why it also cannot do full HD slow motion video, which again, the GH4 can do.
Correct.
Yeah. So what was the gist of that? Where did you get this information from?
I talked to Sony. I had a long, long conversation with a Sony PR person and two Sony reps. One of them did more talking than the other, Mark Weir. He's their product guy. Really, really nice guy. He's very genuine, very nice person who had no problem telling me all these things. And he had no problem like talking about the GH4 also as a camera that is, you know, definitely a competitor in the video space to Sony's mm-hmm. Alpha series. And he explained to me about the sensor design that they currently have, as well as the processor in the Sony a7R II and a7S, the Bions, that it's not that, combined with the type of sensor, aren't equipped to handle what we would think. So in some ways that some companies will allow you to do different things on cameras is to use smaller and smaller sections of a sensor. So if you want to go like super high speed, high frame rate, or you want to do something else, you know, it'll crop in and sometimes it'll get better. I was curious why Sony didn't crop in on the full frame sensor and just go super 35 or smaller, just even smaller than that, maybe 1 inch, and just give me some sort of high speed shooting. I didn't even care if it was 96, like maybe not, I don't know, 120, 90, didn't care. It didn't matter to me. I just wanted something beyond 60. And they said that it was like physically impossible for two separate reasons. The sensor itself is designed differently. It's not the dual layer CMOS. It's slightly different. And the processor that they've got doesn't have enough DRAM, and the camera doesn't have enough DRAM to handle all that data. So it's a twofold problem. It's not even like the cropping on the sensor. We haven't even gotten to that point yet. They basically just said the two things we're putting into this camera to make it do what it does can't accommodate high frame rate, HFR, or 10-bit ever. So they're not going to do it until they upgrade their processor or think differently about their sensor, which I don't foresee that for some time, at least on these. Then we're not going to see that in the a7S II. I actually am pretty confident in saying that we will not see HFR on the a7S II.
Oh, that's a shame. And I would hope that maybe if they went with a crop, you know, the Super 35 crop filming mode, that would make more sense to me. If you go the Super 35 crop, that you get high frame rate, higher frame rate than, say, 60, like 96. That would make more sense, but I guess no.
Yeah, it just can't handle the amount of data that's going to be throughput through that thing. It just can't do it. So what that's we probably true. Will see out of the a7S II is maybe even better ISO performance, which would be ridiculous. And
I expect that. That's the point of the S, right? Sensitivity. Yeah.
Internal 4K, which will be great. Probably Cinema 4K. And that might be about all that we can expect out of it. I don't think we'll see 4K 60p. We won't see 1080, 96, or 120p. We might see internal 8-bit, external 10, maybe. But don't hold your breath.
Okay. I'll wait for the... actually, I think in a couple of days, we'll also have news from the GH4 front, too.
You think so?
I don't want to swerve this conversation because I still want to talk about Sony, but I think so. I think...
A couple of days.
I think there'll be some news.
I know. I'm expecting something in September, but I haven't heard anything concrete.
I'm thinking if something's going to happen, it's going to happen on the 1st. That's... Right. But I could be wrong.
I'll go put some tendrils out there and see what I can find. But anyway, talking more about Sony, go on.
We have two reviews now because comparing with your review, Jaren, you know, 4 out of 5 stars, and you mentioned about this sluggishness when you do take a photo, but you're the only one that's mentioned that there's actually a single button that kind of cuts through that, which is the function button.
Yeah, it's so roundabout. It's so roundabout.
Yeah. So we have two reviews by a person I respect gratefully from, I think he's Kuala Lumpur, and his name is Ming Tian. It's either Kuala Lumpur or Singapore. I'm really bad with that geography. And he basically was just like, it's a long review, but basically the TLDR is not impressed. Are you laughing because I didn't
explain TLDR? The TLDR.
You explain it, Jaren.
Too long, didn't read. It's a Reddit thing.
Yes. But one thing he does mention it that makes me, like, I guess I get it. This is why I'm not a Sony shooter. I haven't adopted it yet, or I'm not, like...
I think you're right. Is phenomenal. This is what you say.
That it doesn't have feel. It doesn't have, like... Soul. The camera doesn't have emotion. And a great example he gives is, I guess, the D800E... It kind of doesn't have an emotion to it. It doesn't like give you joy using it. But the small tweaks that Nikon made in the D810 did make it enjoyable. And it's basically, as far as I can tell, it's just a kind of a sideways upgrade for the D800 to D810E. But he says that's an example of where you have this kind of, joyless hub, a hunk of object. Whereas the D810E then was, with small tweaks, made it a much more joyful camera to use. And so he puts it in that the A7 R2 is not that joyful to use until he estimates the Mark III, which hopefully we get a better processor, right, Jaren? We should, because that's...
I hope so. That's like the main thing that's wrong with it.
Yeah.
Did you say these other guys also said that they found it to be like super sluggish to review footage?
Yeah, and both of them did. And also...
the second one being...
Second one, Von Wong... Benjamin Von Wong, I love his title for his review, 42 megapixels of garbage. And yeah. I think that's mostly because he was using Sony lenses, nothing adapted, and he went to 100% and it was just a muddy mess.
And he was
at base ISO too.
Is that what he said? Because I thought that meant that...
What did he say?
He was taking pictures of literally garbage. I didn't actually read his...
Oh no, that's what he actually means. If you scroll down, I think... I don't know what part, but he did shows 100% crop.
He did take pictures of garbage.
Yeah, here it is. I'm going to say this. I'm going to quote him. Quote, "To my great disappointment, though, after pulling my shots into the computer, I discovered that despite the resolution of the files, they just looked smudgy." And in parentheses, "see full res raw files here." So he's got a link to raw files, close parentheses. And then bold, "something I have since discovered that only seems to happen with my 28-135, especially when zoomed in, focusing at hyperfocal, unbold. I'll have to get the lens checked out," unquote.
Yeah, I disagree. I think it was his lens, because looking at my files, it is amazing. So
I realized what you just said as well before I started getting into that.
That he literally took pictures of garbage.
Of garbage. Like, it was at a garbage dump.
Yeah, that's why I didn't think he disliked the camera.
What country?
Jesus.
Don't tell you.
Don't put me on the spot like this. I don't remember. Sorry. I read too much in the week. But he made this to be like, he's trying to get people to help out because where he went to is like a dump where people like go and sift through the garbage.
Guatemala.
Yeah. They go, it's a thing. You show up and wait for the trucks to dump off garbage and then you go and you look for whatever you want out of it. It's horrible. Yeah, it's terrible.
But I mean, I like that he does the, is that the right word? Philanthropical route with this as well. And I guess I always thought that the images, I looked at the images like, yeah, they don't really seem that good. Who's the reviewer that said everything felt like using the A7S feels dampened as if it was in like an oil? Like
A7S?
Dampened in oil. Sorry, the A7R2.
That statement doesn't resonate with me. I don't remember who said that. Dampened with oil, really?
Yeah, everything. Here it is. It's actually Ming. He says, "Operationally, this does not feel like a fast camera. Every action seems slightly delayed, as though dampened in oil."
Yeah, I can agree with
that
statement.
"Power on is slow. Reviewing images and zooming in is laggy. Moving the focusing point requires at least one extra button press, and the box moves in small increments instead of jumping at the whole box width."
This is all processor stuff.
"Even the bite point of the shutter release is a bit too deep." This is why I love reading this guy. I swear to God. I love reading Ming Tian, and it's stuff like this. "The bite point of the shutter release is a bit too deep." Like, for me, that's actually really important. I'm not kidding. The feel of a camera, like how it's kind of, I guess, well-made or put together and how things feel just under your fingers. And you're just, I don't know, I feel like when you're shooting, your brain is not engaged in how you should work the camera. The camera should just kind of flow with you. And what you're trying to focus on is, say, the feel or the look of the image that you're going for. And, you know, I'm looking at composition, at lighting, and just trying to get the right moment and timing, right? And so the camera just flows with you. It's harmonious. And so things like having a bite point of the shutter release a bit too deep, kind of, it just doesn't go with the feel of the camera. Like, you got to, like, oh, I have to squeeze a bit more. That's not good.
So for me, I think what's interesting about this is you'll find that landscape photographers and time lapsers can't get enough of this camera. People who focus on shooting other people will find things to dislike.
That's me.
And that's a lot more people than shoot landscapes.
But I will say this. I would like to get my hands on it and feel for it firsthand. I don't want to make my judgments just based on what...
Roll down to Sammy's. They've got them. You can go play with it.
I'm just going to wait for Bonacore to get back and I'll just steal his copy. Not really steal it, but play with it.
You could steal. Yeah. So anyway, there we go. A7 R2, more stuff out of it. It's still awesome, but I agree there's improvements to be made.
Okay, good. And now... the more rest of the news, Instagram, in our finally of the week, has decided to add portrait and landscape orientation. Big question to you now, Jaren. Is the square picture / video dead now, that format? Because you know how we have on iPhones, you know how you can switch between video, panoramic, even slow-mo.
Square. The other ones? You got the other ones. The other one is square. Yeah.
Yeah, and now I'm thinking... when would I ever shoot square other than, I mean, I never shoot any square anyway because I always crop in, but when do I shoot square anyway if Instagram now doesn't need to fully support it now? What's the use?
I was using Instagram before it was cool, man, back when we only had square.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're totally right, dude.
So, yeah. I don't know. I think I'm not actually a huge fan of this decision. I think the square format gave Instagram its a little bit of its... soul
and uniqueness. I completely agree with you.
I'm not down with the changing that. I mean, I'm down with changing many other things, like let me upload from my computer, but don't change who you are, man. But okay, they tried it, so we'll see.
But I can understand that for the purposes of video, and I'm not talking vertical video because that's getting more popular now. Like we've had updates to Facebook and YouTube to allow for a full screen vertical video when you play a video.
Mm-hmm.
But that video is definitely, shot in a landscape format, you know, wide format. And so that way, video on Instagram is more and more popular now. And so I imagine that they're just, well, this is now we can play it natively, where everyone else is making stuff for it already in Square. But I guess, I don't know. I don't feel, even though it's a finally, I'm not too wild about it. They did say that there was like a huge percentage of pictures that had white or black borders. Like I upload pictures to Instagram with white borders.
I don't. I never did. I always uploaded and made it a square crop.
And not always. I just started doing that. But that's not always. But
so there we go.
I feel like the integrity of the photo is for me best, like, okay, that size. But there we are.
That happened. All
right. Next one is, I think I put this in because I thought you would get really excited about this. Because I thought their demo video for this, Real Steady, is the name of the company, and I guess the name of the app plugin as well. We're talking about an After Effects plugin here, Jared. Mm-hmm. That's how deep we're getting. It's a stabilization plugin, which looks amazing, much better than Warp Stabilizer in their examples. What do you got to say about this? Check it out.
As it's happening right now, I am watching it. So I'm letting you know what I think in real time. Wow, that is really shaky footage. Really shaky
Well, that's
footage.
The point. The one thing that annoys me most is shaky footage.
Yeah, which, and Warp Stabilizer, I have to agree. Warp Stabilizer looks like balls. Whoa!
Balls means not very good, people.
Oh, my God.
And this is without any hardware. Like, I've seen other stabilizer stuff, Jaren, where you put, like, a little hardware accelerometer in your camera shoe, your cold, hot shoe,
mm-hmm.
and then you shoot video, and then it takes, an app then takes the data from the stabilizer and stabilizes the footage to get something similar to this, or like very like this. And this is the only one that I've seen where it's pure software post.
Where did you see this? Where did you find this?
I want to say newshooter.com is the place that led me to
Newshooter. They're good.
I love Newshooter. They're a great website, great resource, and they are proper, like, you know, those journalists you see out in the field who are just getting stuff done and being innovative. Those are those guys. Those people who, like, work with, you know, television news organizations.
It's like, man, that hyperlapsing looks so good.
You guys hear that? Jaren needs a change of underwear. So this is how good this plugin is. And right now it's available as a free trial. We're not kidding. This is not a paid sponsorship by any means. But I was very impressed with what they're putting out there. And it's at realsteady.com, R-E-E-L, steady.com. They offer a 30-day free trial right now that you can download for free, which is good. And right now, I think it's if you pre-buy it, you get the beta right now. That's what I understand.
How much do they want for this? Hold on.
I want to say it's 150. Oh god.
400.
Okay, well that's more than I said. So there's that. But do you think, is that worth it to you, Jaren?
Yes. $400 or something like this? I'm gonna buy this when I get home.
He's hesitant because it is more money than he wants to spend, but he does realize it's absolutely worth it.
But
it does.
I have a piece of footage that I feel like I don't want to send to the client because it's not quite stable enough, and this would make it so good. I want this.
Can you charge a client $400 more for it?
No, well, they're booking me for more shoots, so I might as well just.
Well, there you go. That would work.
Just keep bite the bullet and buy it. This is so good. I'm impressed. I'm really impressed.
This is good. All right. Then the last piece of news. Moving on. Amazon will now give you 1 free year of unlimited cloud storage with the purchase of some camera gear. I think minimum $50 you got to spend. Otherwise, if you just wanted to buy 1 year of free unlimited cloud storage, it's $60 a year. And this offer is only good for like the first year. And then obviously you got to put your credit card in. And then the second year they will charge you $59.99 for the next year.
Is this storage of any file type?
Correct. This isn't different. This is very different from your Amazon Prime membership where you get free photo storage, which doesn't include RAWs. It's like JPEGs. It's like your stuff you shoot on your camera phone, right? That's unlimited. That's whatever. Not videos either. This is unlimited storage for everything you have for a year for $60. And that's a deal. That is a stinking deal. And you know what? I have a Synology RAID that I use for all my files that I back up to.
Are you pointing to it?
Two. Yeah, I'm pointing to it. It's back
right
there.
Behind you.
And it has two hot swappable drives. So if one drive fails, I'm okay. Second drive fails, still okay. Third drive fails, I'm totally effed.
Yeah,
but
I'm the
it
same
would
way.
Have to take it would have to take three hard drive failures out of eight to put me out of commission there. There's a little plugin. I just type in the credentials. I select what folders I want to back up. It will back them up for me right in the background. And I would love this. And the great thing is it sends you a link when you click on in our show notes on our website, resourcemagonline.com, that Amazon will show you a list of the camera stuff. And you can just go price lowest to highest and spend $50 on an item that you would probably normally buy anyway. And then get the free year instead of paying $60. So you save $10.
And you get something.
Yes, and you get something. Or, you know, you get to spend at least more than $50. But I saw lots of stuff there. I think you can even buy an Amazon gift card for that much. So I guess you can hand that to somebody else or use it to buy other stuff. But you can do that. But that's a good thing. I think that's a great deal because I would love to back up all my RAWs. And yeah, I know Amazon Glacier is available. When I did the math for how much storage I'd use, it just became a little uncomfortable for me to spend that much more a month just backing up all that data. And this would work out wonderfully as well.
I like it a lot.
Jaren, did you see this? Wiz Khalifa, who was arrested at the airport, and he's laying flat on his back on the ground. And the cop's favorite line is saying, stop resisting. And he's just this super skinny, like, 120-pound thin black man just lying on the ground. And the cops, like, surrounded by 6-7 cops, like, stop resisting. There's that. But we're not making a commentary on race here. We're actually, this whole event was captured on video, on an iPhone video. Specifically, the VHS camcorder app, available for $4.99 in the App Store.
Which released the day before.
Which was released the day before. It shoots 4x3 aspect video with your VHS
scan
lines. Not VHS. It's not scan lines. It looks like a camcorder footage because it would have the little like Sony style font of like the time and the date, right?
Messed up footage at the bottom is like the tape.
Yeah, it looks like you needed to set the tracking for your VHS camcorder, right? It looked like that. And so that's how it was shot. And I think most people didn't bat an eye because, you know, this is maybe looks like a security cam footage. But this, I think that's hilarious. And it made me think about other questions of like, not the best usage of this app, probably. But it looks like it was shot in like the 80s because like the dynamic range is horrible. The shadows are crushed. If you click through the link, Jaren, and then click on the pic.twitter.com link that is on the website, which is his Wiz Khalifa's tweet, you can actually see the video playing in the tweet.
Yeah, I just watched it.
A little 13-second. And it totally feels like I'm back in, I don't know, 1993 in Disneyland. And this is what I was recording family with way back in the day. But do you think the footage would have been better if you didn't record it this way, just through the app?
I don't know.
You think it would have made more news?
To be honest, I didn't even hear about this. I think because it looks like this, people assumed it's old.
This is the point.
The timestamp says August 22nd, 2015 at 3:55 p.m.
And he was on one of those hoverboards or those electric self-balancing scooters that Casey Neistat has had.
So they're all over New York too, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. My nephew, he's visiting from England, and he checks eBay, I swear, every 3 hours to see if he can get a lower price to try and buy it before he takes back to England. And he is obsessed. He wants one so bad.
They're fun. Chris Knight has a unicycle, but it's like the same concept, but it's a unicycle. It's one wheel. It's much harder to ride, but you feel like that much more of a badass when you do. But
the only thing you shouldn't do on this, I mean, most people, what they'll do is, and I believe Segway makes a version of this without the without the handle, just the foot platform, and professional camera. Cameraman I've seen in there's like an international worldwide sport going on where Usain Bolt just won some stuff, and there's a cameraman on one of those. He's filming Usain Bolt, and then he hits the side of something, trips, falls, and actually kind of slightly runs over Usain Bolt.
Hits him in the back and like takes the legs out from underneath him.
Yeah, and Usain Bolt's fine, just kind of limps away. He was fine, but and then I saw another clip. It was actually on newsshooter.com as an example, where this guy was covering a cricket match, and he couldn't see what was in front of him, below him on the ground, and it was some guy's helmet that just left a helmet. And he ran over that and totally, ate it and fell. He didn't hurt anyone. But he was also a cameraman on a self-balanced kind of electric scooter type device.
They're cool, but man, they're dangerous if you don't know what you're hitting. Yeah.
Because you can't see where you're going, and you just assume everything's clear around you. You just need an assistant or something around you, but that person needs to be ahead of you, or that's tough. How nowadays, if you're going to be successful, you have to be like you got to be the cameraman, you got to be the producer, you got to be the editor, and now you also have to provide your own transportation at the same time as shooting. Yeah. Next story, going to go a little bit more serious on you guys now. The photo as a weapon in modern day media society. Did you read this, Jaren, from Photo Shelter blog?
Yeah, I read it over.
Yeah. By the way, Alan Murabayashi, who's there, does some excellent work on that website. Really respect his work and his writing. But very good point about how he uses an example of like Colin Powell's UN speech and how a photo was used with satellite imagery, and that was used to convince people there that Iraq had the means of building a weapons of mass destruction, and then therefore going to war $2 trillion if you weren't counting to do that. There's the whole mugshot extortion racket, which some counties, I guess, take a picture of a mugshot and then post it on the internet, and then other websites spider that information, keep the mugshot up with SEO, with a name, and then that if that victim wants to then never wants to goes to trial, freeze his name, and then needs to get that mugshot rid of because someone Googles him, then that guy has to pay those websites to remove his mugshot, which is now some states have made this illegal, by the way. There's the beheadings by like ISIS, then they're all shot strategically in such a way to get most the viralness out of it. There's the fappening, which happened last year, and revenge porn. There's all these different, using your photo. Even a show I was watching on HBO that just ended, Ballers. Mm-hmm. Did you watch Ballers, Jared?
No.
There was a storyline in it in which they were these sports celebrities were partying on a boat, and somebody took pictures, and they were doing drugs with escorts. And there were photographs taken, and one of them threatened to sell them to, let's say, TMZ, if the actual person in the photos, like the sports player, would actually pay more, and then they wouldn't get published. So that's photos as weapon as well. And we see a lot of these photos going viral that show, you know, whether it be an unarmed black kid being shot by a white cop, right? We see a lot of that going social and viral. So it's not just a video, but it's also, you know, most important here is how media is becoming a weapon that you can use. And just recently, last week, we had a shooting on August 26th where a reporter and a camera operator were shot live on air. Right? That was in, I think, Roanoke, Virginia.
What was sad about that, it was the whole segment was about terrorism.
Yeah. And so, like, this, I know it's heavy, but, like, you know, can you share, pick it up for me, because I'm trying to get a sense of, like, where I'm trying to say, but help me out here.
I mean, let me just read the last paragraph he wrote. Okay. And maybe that'll help. When the photo is a weapon, the act of looking makes us partially complicit in its premeditated effect. When we intend to use a photo as a weapon, we turn a collection of optical data into something nefarious. No longer intended to document or bring joy, the photo becomes a visual reminder of the worst aspects of man, bent on destroying everything in its sights.
Yeah. This also reminds me of a very good movie, if you can find it, called The Bang Bang Club.
I've never seen that. I haven't even heard of it, no.
I actually have it. I'll try and share it with you, too. It's about photojournalists who are in, I want to say they're in, like, South Africa. And one of them was played by Ryan Philippe. And it was these four. And it was all based on a true story. Do you remember that one photo that won, like, a Pulitzer, where it was, like, this African child just hunched over, like, really skinny, because, you know, you see all his bones, like, a small child, like, maybe one years old, and there's a vulture in the background?
Yeah.
Okay, so that photographer who shot that was part of the Bang Bang Club. And the Bang Bang Club was basically four photojournalists in South Africa, and you know, covering, like, I think it was apartheid at the time, and it was just a fantastic movie to watch. But, you know, a lot of that is they're out there trying to get the shot, trying to make a living, and doing whatever it takes. And some stuff was, I think they showed examples of some stuff that was staged, some stuff that was real, some stuff how they just get in with, like, the local kind of criminal lords, and how they got photos that way, and how those photos then when. And they're all shooting film and back then, and how they bring it to their editors, the local offices there, and they're like, well, this is brilliant, you know, you keep going more and we'll pay you more. But yeah, a lot of it is they're trying to get, these photojournalists are out there trying to get better photos to, like, one up each other, but not, they're not, there's a few instances where they try and help a situation. I think one of them was shot and they had to help each other out, or, you know, but they'll usually take pictures first before they shoot. And I think you had a story earlier, Jaron, about how, and you have to help me with the context of what happened in that, but I believe there was a photographer who shot and did not help. Sorry, he kept shooting.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that was in Israel. It was at a parade. It was a LGBT gay pride parade, and a very Hasidic man who had done this before. Like 3 years before, I came out and started with the knife and started stabbing random people he could find. And the photographer just kept taking pictures. And a lot of people had a problem with that. Like, why didn't he step in and help them rather than keep shooting? And there's a whole argument along the lines of that. I took the side of, well, if he didn't take those pictures, how would we know about this? How would awareness get out of the situation, of the problem, of the discontent that is still out there? Because for me, living in San Francisco, I don't notice that nearly as much as perhaps someone who's gay, who's living in, like, Alabama, or in this case, Israel. So, where they're, like, maybe less tolerant of it. Not to say there's anything wrong with Alabama. I'm just, you know, come on, it's not going to be as tolerant as San Francisco. And so, like, the other argument is, why didn't he step in? He could have saved lives, because one of the girls did die. It's a tough situation. I think that that was his point, to use those photos as a weapon. I think weapon is the wrong word, but it's the same sort of idea that he was attempting with these photos. He was able to do something to make people notice, to have those people understand what's happening. And I think that is important. But the examples that this article is talking about using it as a weapon, like the cyberbullying, or trying to you know, a certain photo might not be what the photo's actually about, but if put in the wrong kind of context around it, you can manipulate a situation, and that's not okay. And the other thing was, it's like, there was quite a bit surrounding trying to actually see the footage of these people getting shot, the woman and her cameraman in that story we were just mentioning. I don't really think anyone should watch that, and I think that this sort of thing gives
nothing good can come from it.
No, it gives power to the guy who was doing the shooting. Yeah. And this is the case every single time there's a mass shooting in the United States. There's just ridiculous coverage of it because our media feeds on it because it knows people will want to see it because, you know, humans aren't perfect. We are drawn to that sort of thing. We're drawn to violence. And they know it and they exploit it. And no matter, like, the only way to help these things stop is for these media organizations to just not cover it. Not give these people any time on air, because that's exactly what they want. But I don't see that changing, unfortunately. So, I mean, the takeaway from this, I guess, is to really think about the photos, about what's being said with these pictures, what the intent is, and, you know, don't just immediately hit that share button if you don't really understand the ramifications of the image.
Yeah, I don't think there's one large takeaway. Just for you guys, you know that this is happening out there. Just, you know, be better informed to know that. You know, I have often seen images where, like, a person pointing a camera, let's say with a 7200 mil lens on it, something that has a long lens barrel, is often more powerful than, say, someone holding a gun. Right? Because I guess a gun can affect one person, but at least the photo can affect hundreds, if not millions, just with one click. No, just be there. But all right, let's go to something a bit more, I would hope, inspirational, about our feelings of, as a photographer, as a, you know, creative, the feeling of being inadequate as a photographer.
Mm-hmm.
And then he also had a few words to say about the Sony A7R2, just to make sure we got
that. Yeah, like literally a few. Well. There's like two paragraphs.
We'll save it for the end. But Neil Ta out of Toronto, Canada, neighbor up north, he wrote a lovely article, which you know what? When I was reading this, Jaren, I was like, oh, it got me right in the feels.
Right in the feels?
Right in the feels.
Right there. Yeah. Why?
It did, because I'm like, he's so right. Like, I feel this. Like, yeah. He talks about, like, you know, we have friends who have been working, let's say, .com jobs, who are, you know, they're buying houses, or they're married, or they have kids, or they just bought a new Porsche. You know, the feeling of envy.
Living the typical life of someone of our age.
Yes, right. I suppose. Yeah, if I was my age and in his lifestyle, the things that I would be, you know, Neil Ta references that he drives a 15-year-old car, and if I do the math quickly in my head, I think an 18-year-old car. Yeah, I do.
I got mine's from 2002. So
yeah, used 2000. Mine's 97, but I bought it 5 years used.
Yeah, so but there you go.
But I'm okay with that. Like, I'm okay with that. I don't feel. I knew I see people with newer cars. Like, I would love a Tesla one day, but I'm still happy. That's the big. I think that's the biggest point.
One of his whole paragraphs in there, he was talking about how when he wasn't doing what he's doing now, being a photographer and making less money, he was struggling with some real anxiety problems. Like, he was not doing well, and it's because there are certain people who aren't programmed to handle the kind of stress that you get in day jobs, or live in the kind of, like, some, I know some people who are really perfectly content to continue to do the exact same thing every single day for the rest of their lives. They have no problem being a cog in the wheel because they get that 2 weeks of paid vacation. And when they go home at night, they get a couple hours before bed and the weekends. That's enough for them. I mean, for you and me, I'm going to speak for you because I imagine you're the same way, but
you may.
It only took a few years of that, even working in different... I couldn't hold a job for more than 2 years. In fact, I think I usually quit at the exact 2-year mark. I would go find another job.
That's me at Apple. You're exactly right.
If not sooner. Like, the first year was like the honeymoon phase. I was like, okay, this is fine. It went by quickly. And as the second year chugged on, I was like, ugh. And I'm going to agree with his statements here. Like, I was becoming... I had an alcohol problem. Like, I would drink heavily. every night when I came home, because that was the only way for me to like de-stress from the day. Like, I clearly, like, I'm not an alcoholic. Like, I could.
No, you're not.
And I
you
did.
Barely have anything.
I did stop. Like, I can still drink like whenever I want, and I don't ever drink heavily. Like, I was never in danger of being like a true alcoholic, but I was drinking to an unhealthy degree every day by myself. That's not okay. And my now fiance would come home and see me like this washed up mess watching television, just blitzed. I mean, I was happy because I was like two martinis deep, but I mean, I was great in my mind. But like when I sobered up the next day, I was like, I was thinking to myself, like, why do I need to drink? Like, what am I doing to myself where I feel like I have to do this in order to like de-stress? Like, why am I putting my body through this? And I was making really good money, and I was on like a fast track. Like, if I continued on that path, I could probably be making easily over $100,000 a year, on my way to be making a lot more than that. I don't come anywhere close to that now.
And how miserable were you back then?
Oh, I was terrible. And he cites a study, and I did that thing where I don't actually look up and see if the study actually happened. You know, you read articles and they say such and such said this, and they'll link to it, but I never click the link to read the study. But he said what he was saying was that there's no discernible difference between someone who's comfortably got enough money and someone who's really wealthy in terms of their actual happiness. Like, some,
because yeah, I've always heard that figure of being, if you're making, I think, $70,000 a year, anything above that, like that's what you just need to be comfortable.
Right. I think eventually too much money like bothers
more
you.
Problems?
Yeah, like the good point, I don't know if you saw this, probably not. The guy who sold Minecraft to Microsoft, he sold it for $2.5 billion, is just unhappy as all get out right now.
What's his name?
I can't remember. I saw it on Reddit earlier today. You can look it up. Anyone can look it up. We'll put it in the show notes. Karaminder will look it up and put it in the show notes for you. He just is not feeling happy. It was in a Yahoo article, and he's just like all these people. Basically, he called the guys he sold his software to assholes. And now that he has all that money, all he can do is like everyone around him is that way. And it's driving him up the wall. So, like, yeah, I'm sure you could, if you inherited a bunch of money and never knew any different, you could probably be or think that you're happy. But for the rest of us trying to link this back, I am so much happier now than I was back when I had more money. And it's just because I'm doing what I love. I wake up on my own terms. I do things the way that I want to do them. But I do have to work every day. He mentions this. He has to work. If he doesn't work, he doesn't eat. He doesn't have a place to live. But once in a while, he can decide, it's December for me. It's December. This is how it is for me. I don't need to work this month because, one, no one has any money to hire out a videographer right now, a commercial videographer. They've already spent all their money, did all my work in October. I'm just going to go stay with my parents for 3 weeks and not care. Or I want to go to New York for a week. And all right, let's go. It's not a problem. No big deal. Like, that's the kind of thing, the freedom that you have when you're like us, able to just decide for yourself what you want to do. And I think that is a lot more valuable than currency.
Yes. I'm actually reading, the person's name is Marcus Person, aka Notch. And yeah, in a series of tweets, he basically says that, like, the problem with getting everything is that you run out of reasons to keep trying. And human interaction becomes impossible due to that imbalance. And so he gives examples of, like, he, you know, bought himself a nice mansion, parties.
Okay, let me stop parties. You right there.
Yeah.
That nice mansion, it wasn't just a nice mansion. It was the nicest house available on the market at the time.
Yeah, quote, $70 million
price tag. I believe he beat out Jay-Z and Beyonce for that house.
Wow.
But continue.
Yeah. Well, the point is that this tweet gets to me too. He says he found a great girl, but she's afraid of me and my lifestyle and went with a normal person instead. Right? And so, like, in Sweden, he sits around and waits for his friends with jobs and families to have time to do stuff, while all the while he just watches his reflection in the monitor. Like, he's got nothing to do. And so it's just this huge imbalance that he talks about. And he says he doesn't mind going Musk and trying to save the world. He's referencing Elon Musk. And he says it just exposes him to the same type of assholes that made him sell Minecraft again.
Yeah. I think what he needs to do is he's not used to this. he's adjusting. No. And
yeah, the successful people he's tweeted said that this happens and that this will pass. So maybe it's just one of those phases, I suppose.
I can totally see this happening, where you're like, everything that you used to do no longer matters, and everything that you want to try and do just feels like it's not going to get you anywhere. I understand where he's coming from. It's like it's like a rich people problems, and it's hard for some people to like sympathize. But I do. He's got to learn to do what we did, and become happy with doing things for the sake of doing them.
Yeah. I can understand that. Yeah.
Like, if I had his money, there'd be like several projects I would just do for myself. I wouldn't care if anything came of them. I'd be like, I just want to do this because I want to do it.
Right. And Neil Ta, you know, gives great examples of that. You know, even though he's envious of these other people, other friends who like have the newer Porsche and everything, they're envious of him because he doesn't have to, you know, answer to a boss, and he gets the freedom to travel. He travels a lot. And you know, it's just always, everyone has like envy for each other. And then he goes, you know, you can go through the end of the jealousy chain and then end up with like a poor kid who has clean water, who has food envy, you know, that you just have food. And right. Said that you have food. So that's the point of like, you know, at the end of the day, just, are you happy with where you are? Cause
that's, I mean, if you're happy working that cog in the wheel day job, like, I know someone who's happy, who can't imagine why I would ever have quit. Dude,
yeah, I have a friend like that too. Yeah.
Keep going then, man. I'm not saying my lifestyle is something you should be trying to go for. Keep doing what you're doing. Yeah. But don't feel down if your decision isn't what your friends have decided, because you made the decision for a reason.
Right. And so one of the last sentences here is to my friends who are killing it, keep killing it. And to those who sometimes feel like I felt this past little while, I'll leave you with some perspective from one of my favorite songwriters, Eddie Vedder. Quote, I wish I was as fortunate as me, unquote. And then finally, he leaves off with a Sony A7R2 R2 review. Jaren, do you want to give a quick summary of what he says?
It's a camera. It works like other cameras you might have touched. It takes pictures. I'm not going to shoot a wedding with it because 42 megapixels for each photo will blow up my computer. That's really the gist of what he said.
And he prefers to use his Fuji X100T.
Yeah, because
it's that. We can start to close out the show. So, guys, thank you for joining us. Again, we love the comments, the questions, reading the reviews we have up on iTunes. You can reach us on Twitter, at Rewrap Podcast. You can find Jaren on Twitter, at Jaren Schneider. You can find me on Twitter, at Kara Minder. And all the information that Jaren works on is available at resourcemagonline.com. And from time to time, I post there. I probably need to post that more often.
From time to time.
Time to time. If you want to email us, it's rewrap@resourcemagonline.com. And if you like what you hear, please rate us on iTunes. That really does help us out. Share us amongst with your friends, anyone else who you feel that could benefit from listening to like a healthy little dose of some news, some opinion, and some commentary, I suppose. Yeah. So thank you. And we really appreciate it. We will see you here all next week.
And I'll be home back in the Bay, getting out of New York.